Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whoops. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
David Cobb is a college basketball and college football writer at CBS Sports. You can follow all of his work at CBSSports.com, and you can follow him on X at David W. Cobb. David, how's it going?
Hey, Gabe, going well. How are you?
I am doing well. Now, our favorite topic before we get to college football season, it has to do with weddings on Saturdays. You know where I'm going with this. The Knot reports, and The Knot is a wedding website. Which one did you use? What did you guys use? I forget exactly which one I used. It was Zola?
Ooh.
I think I used Zola. I think that's the off-brand Knot.
I'm not sure if we had a wedding website. Sarah, did we have a wedding website?
Yeah.
We did.
Yeah,
which,
you
which
did.
Which one was it?
Yeah.
It was The Knot.
Okay, it was The Knot. It was The Knot. That makes it. Connor, did you use The Knot, or do you? This is above your pay grade.
It's
above your pay grade.
Above my pay grade.
But The Knot is reporting that Saturday, October 12th, is one of the five most popular wedding dates in 2024, and that is the day where we get Ohio State, Oregon. We have the Red River rivalry, Ole Miss versus LSU, Penn State versus USC. Now, I am not aware, and obviously my wife handles most of this. I'm not aware of a wedding I have to attend, so I'll be all good. But where do we stand on attending a wedding on October 12th?
It's not ideal because, look, we work in it. Like, if it's one thing if you're a fan, but when you work in it, it
right.
really puts you in a tough spot. Because, like, if you're quote, just a fan, like, I realize being a fan is really important to a lot of people. It's why we have jobs. But, like, if you're, quote, just a fan, you know, then you go to the wedding and you watch the game on your phone. But, so I was in this situation in 2017. It was 2018. It was the last game for me on the Tennessee beat before I started on the Grizzlies beat. And Tennessee was trash. It was their first year under Jeremy Pruitt. And they were playing Charlotte. And one of my best friends was getting married in Memphis. And I felt bad about leaving my job mid-season covering Tennessee. And so I stayed and covered that Charlotte game and missed like one of my best friend's weddings. And like, I regret that now, actually, like, to be honest, like, yeah, I got to cover one last game in the Neyland Stadium press box, but I missed like one of my very best friend's weddings to do it. So like, actually, you know what? Like I'm okay, with going to the wedding and watching the game on the phone. Like I can make my peace with that.
Now, I will say this. I had a September 30th wedding last year, and you know what that was? That was Boise State versus Memphis in that close thriller. And I remember being outside taking pictures. Drew Barrett, our good friend Drew Barrett. Shout out to Drew Barrett. He was outside watching the game on his phone. I think he was smoking a cigarette at the time, and I ended up looking over his shoulder. But I think, honestly, that was a test by my wife, right? That's got to be a test.
Had to be.
To schedule
had
it on
be.
The
and
Boise State Memphis group of five game of the week. That's brutal, but I passed the test clearly.
Well, you got called out too, wasn't it? Silverfield calling you out like on the air.
He said he knew I couldn't show up. What he said, it was in the weekly presser. He said he knew I couldn't make it, but of course he sent me the wedding registry so I could buy him a gift. And I'm like, listen, the nice thing to do is to send out the invitation to whoever you want to be there, even if they can't make it. Right? Like, I'm not going to not send you the wedding invite.
you know, when you put in a lot of blood, sweat, and tears to get Coach Silverfield to where he is today, so I think he owed you a wedding gift.
I like that. Maybe owes me a nice 11-win, 12-win season. Why not?
Yeah,
college football playoff berth.
Well, I mean that would be the ultimate gift. I mean, yeah. Like,
so if he gets that, can I? We're all forgiven, right? If he gets I think I have to forgive him. There's no more favors he owes me.
I would absolutely say that satisfies. I mean, you know, from a man's perspective, your favorite team reaching a historical peak like that, I mean, that's worth more than any china that you could put on a wedding registry.
Yeah. Speaking of which, my wife the other day, it's kind of funny you bring that up. She's like, I hate these pans. We need to put another registry out. I'm like, that's not going to work. I think the statute of limitations on wedding registries have run out. But I did see, I think he's your colleague. He's at 247 Sports, at least. Bud Elliott put this out. He said, there are a few people who seriously won't go to fall weddings because of football. There are exponentially more who say they won't go on social media or with their boys. It's kind of fun to joke, and he says, and then they'll ask their girl what tie to wear and then call the Uber. But honestly, I don't know if I can relate to that because we're not a-holes. You know, if it's my friend's wedding, I still have to show up. I'm not going to be that guy.
Yeah. Well, and it's honestly, it's fun when at the wedding reception, you know, there's a handful of you and your buddies who are interested in a game. And I'll tell you, there's this idea on the internet today that, like, oh, well, like, once you turn 30 and mature a little bit, like, then you get past this. No, you don't. I was in Ohio for my cousin's wedding a couple years ago. My grandfather is a diehard Penn State fan. He went to Penn State. He's 87 years old, sitting there watching the game on his phone during my cousin's wedding reception, you know, with his Yingling. So this doesn't just end when you reach a certain threshold of maturity and your brain is fully formed.
Right.
Gabe, like, you and I are going to be dealing with this for a long, long time, probably for the rest of our lives.
Isn't it a great sight, though, to have one phone out that's propped up on someone's drink? Someone's got, like, a Red Bull vodka sitting there. You prop the phone up. All the boys are behind you cheering from that little screen. They see a touchdown by Memphis. Everybody just erupts. That's a scene to behold.
For sure. And the happy couple, they're so enamored and engrossed in everything they got to do. They're you know, shaking hands. They're dancing. They're eating, they're you know, taking pictures. There's so many other things that they're not going to get upset that there's a handful of the guys sitting around watching a game. In fact, you know, if you have a Saturday wedding, lean into it. You know, have a screen somewhere in the reception hall that's showing the game. I think that's acceptable. So I think there's definitely ways to make the fall weddings work.
Okay, Connor just sent me one. We'll move on from this in a second, but Connor just sent me something insane. You watch the Tulsa miss field goal that helped propel Memphis football in 2019 to get into the Cotton Bowl? You watched that while you were at your wedding?
Not at my wedding.
At
somebody else's wedding. It was great because they understood that they had their wedding a little bit early, and at the reception, they had a giant projector screen, and they put the game on.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And everyone paused and then lost our minds. And do you know what it is like watching a
29-yard field goal,
that type of win for Memphis? And then you turn to your left, and there's an open bar.
That's beautiful. That's, well, yes. Yes. I honestly, I feel that right now. I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it.
I feel God in this Chili's.
Yeah. And moving on, one of the games that will be played on that fateful day of October 12th when everybody's going to be at weddings, it will be the Red River Rivalry. And I have to be honest, and we've been talking about this past couple times you've come on, Texas fans may view me as a Texas hater at this point because, I don't think that they're going to be the top 10 team that falls out of the top 25 and goes unranked. But they lost their second running back for the season in 6 days. True freshman Christian Clark tore his Achilles. They're down to three guys. Jaden Blue, who's played for them before. I think he's, you know, most he's run for in a year is like 400, 500 yards. A guy by the name of Trey Wisner and a true freshman, Jarek Gibson. After that, it looks like they're going to have to find a linebacker, a DB, to come get some carries. This team, they're taking some hits in the preseason, and again, I still don't think they have. It's going to be hard for me to imagine them replacing what they lost a year ago.
Yeah, you're trying to talk me into fate in Texas, aren't you?
I'm not talking you into anything. I'm telling you what I am, where I'm at. I'm fading Texas. I think I'm a Texas fader this year.
I just think it's a favorable schedule. I think if they had Oklahoma's schedule, I might share more of your doubts. Don't get me wrong. Obviously, they got to go to Michigan in week two. Like, that's tough. Like, that's as, you know, and UTSA, for that matter, is a not just, hey, show up and roll the ball out, go home and, you know, win sort of game. It's a game that you actually have to show up for. So from a non-conference perspective, like, there's some meat on the bone there for Texas. But from a league standpoint, man, it is pretty cush for Texas this year, to the point where I think they can get through it and maybe be in the SEC championship game. And I think they're going to be right there. And I think they're, you know, if you're looking at the front runners in the SEC, I'm taking Texas's schedule over Georgia's. I'm taking it over Alabama's, and probably taking it over Ole Miss's too. I think of all of that upper tier in the league, they've got the rosiest schedule of anyone.
But, like, at this point, you're trading in a road game at Texas Tech for a road game at Arkansas. You know what I mean? I just think it's completely different. Completely different. A lot of these games are going to be a lot closer, and can they come through in clutch moments? Even a game against Florida, I think that's a losable game, as opposed to some of the games they were playing against Big 12 opponents.
Yeah, for sure. Florida's the team that everybody assumes they're going to beat, that is actually going to sneak up and beat somebody. This year, I think Arkansas could be that team too. There's a handful in the SEC, because that lower to mid tier of the SEC is so much more difficult than the lower to mid tier of the Big 12. Like last year, especially Oklahoma and Texas. I mean, they had Cincinnati and BYU that were really no good at all there to beat up on. And I mean, you could say that Vanderbilt and Mississippi State are going to be that. This year, and I mean, that's kind of why I like Texas. They get Vanderbilt, they get Mississippi State. But I mean, sure, to your point, like, it's within the realm of possibility that if Texas keeps getting bit by the injuries, that they might not have the depth come November to get through what looks like a manageable month, but that could be a really tough month by the time that you know, November comes around, because they're already taking their hits. We've discussed that they're missing those two NFL interior defensive linemen that were selected. You got a bunch of receivers to replace. Now your running backs are going down. So I get it. I get your train of thought. But I think Texas is still going to be a pick for me to reach the SEC championship game in spite of all that, because you know what? They have depth where it really matters too, because if heaven forbid Quinn Ewers goes down, I mean, they have the best backup quarterback in the country there in Arch Manning. So, you know, you got elite quarterback play against a fairly soft schedule. I think in broad strokes, I'm still a big believer in Texas.
Now, I was, you know, scrolling through my ex today, and I was seeing something from the Next Round Live and the Next Round, a pretty good college football show. But they were talking about that Texas wide receiver room. And we know they added Isaiah Bond, Bolden. They added some guys, and they have Ryan Wingo, who's a five-star guy out of St. Louis. And they said that, you know, Sark might be to the point where this what he had at Alabama in 2019, 2020, he said he thinks the guy on there basically said that he thinks the depth is relatively close to the Devontae Smith, Jerry Jeudy, John Mechie, Jalen Waddle, Henry Ruggs wide receiver group. I don't think that's the case, but how deep do you think it is on the surface? Even though they lost Jordan Whittington and Xavier Worthy, they still have some guys to throw the damn ball to.
Yeah, I mean, I can't quite get that far unless, like, there's a freshman, Wingo, like, he was a five-star guy. Like, unless he pops, like, I can't get there. I mean, because he has some really stacked, talented rooms at Alabama. I mean, like, you know, you bring in Silas Bolden from Oregon State, like, good player. Isaiah Bond, obviously, really good player. But, I mean, it's just, you don't just replace Xavier Worthy and A.D. Mitchell without blinking, especially, like, you have to develop that chemistry with a quarterback in a receiver room. And it's not just a given that happens. And obviously, like, and, you know, talent rises to the top, and, like, I'm sure Quinn Ewers and those guys will figure it out. But to me, I have as many questions about that receiver room as I do about anything else with Texas. Not because there isn't talent there, but because it's talent that doesn't have experience playing together. And when you go on the road to Michigan in week two in a game that will determine the course of your season, you need to be in full alignment at peak chemistry in front of over 100,000 fans in prime time on national TV, right? Like, I don't know. There's just a lot of assumptions there.
Yep.
And I get it from a talent standpoint, but I mean, let's just see it before we before we go ahead and go that far with Texas's receivers.
Yeah, talking with David Cobb at David W. Cobb on X from CBS Sports, covering college football and college basketball. Now, I heard you and Jeffrey having this conversation a little bit earlier, and when Jeffrey said it, I agreed with every utterance. I have kind of talked myself into Arkansas being relatively sneaky, not only because I think they have a good running back room, they have a Taylen Green, we'll see what he is. The defense, you know, sort of got run the score up on last year down the stretch of the season when they seemed to give up. But I think more so than anything, they played a lot of close games against a lot of good competition last year. They were not that far off last year, as much as the record shows that they were very far off.
For sure. And that was with a team that did not have, by any stretch, like that vintage Sam Pittman offensive line. If they can just get the offensive line back to decent, then it allows Arkansas to take a major step back toward 500 or better. So I kind of came down on, hey, I'd be on the over 4.5. Not because I can go through here now looking at their schedule and just pick you right out 6 wins that, oh yeah, Arkansas is definitely going to win these. Like, they're going to have to pull a couple of upsets. Like, they're going to be underdogs probably, you know, at least 7 or 8 times this season. But I mean, look at what Sam Pittman did before last year. Like, we have such a short memory sometimes with some of these coaches, because we were just effusive in our praise of the job that Sam Pittman did during the COVID year. And he was the best thing in SEC football in 2021. And then we get a little lukewarm on him in 22, and he has one bad year. One bad year out of a, you know, now five, going on 5 years as coach, and we're ready to fire him and kick him to the curb because, oh yeah, Arkansas can just go out and hire whoever they want and jump to the front of the SEC pack. No, absolutely not. They can't. Like, Sam Pittman is a great motivator, good offensive line coach. If he can get back to having a decent offensive line, and if Bobby Petrino, you know, is sound of mind enough to draw up some decent game plans, like, they are going to, you know, they're going to be a threat. Like, they're going to make some moments really, really uncomfortable for the teams on their schedule.
And it would be different if they weren't competing in the biggest games of the year. They're still competing. They're losing those games by less than a touchdown in a lot of cases. This is not the Chad Morris era, 2-8. Right? This is a completely different thing where you're losing 8 games and you're losing to A&M at the buzzer and you're losing to LSU at the buzzer. You know, it's just completely different. The level of compete's still there. But again, where should, and this is like an ongoing conversation, where should Arkansas fans with that program, where should their expectations actually be? I think they're relatively nice. Like, they just want to be in the competition at the top of the SEC every 3 years. That's sort of their bar that they have set. But what should their expectations be?
I mean, it kind of depends on how the Tyson chicken stock is doing, right? Like, you got, like, you know, around Memphis, you got to go look at the FedEx stock. In Knoxville now, you got to go see how Pilot's doing. Pilot preserved Neyland Stadium or whatever. Yeah. You know, but like at Arkansas, I mean, it's kind of I'm kind of joking, but kind of serious, because look at all the NIL resources that are going to the basketball program now under John Calipari, not to mention the salary, which is greater than what Eric Musselman's was. And then baseball is such a target of investment there. And then, you know, so does football have the NIL resources to compete at the highest level in the SEC when they're pretty serious about bankrolling their basketball and baseball programs too? I mean, that's a question that I have about Arkansas in this new era of the SEC. So, I mean, I think especially if you go to 9 conference games, Arkansas making a bowl would be really dang respectable on an annual basis. And that doesn't mean you never do anything more than that. It doesn't mean that once a decade you don't creep up and make the playoff, or that, you know, once every 5 or 6 years you don't go win 8 or 9 games or whatever. But by and large, I mean, if you're getting the bowls at Arkansas in this SEC, I mean, I think you're doing a pretty good job. And Sam Pittman has mostly done that. I mean, you throw out the COVID year, in part because you only played SEC opponents. And then you have last year. It was an aberration. They, like you mentioned, lost a lot of close games. So I just think Sam Pittman is a good coach. But the thing about Sam Pittman is he's a CEO. He's not the coordinator type. And so he's got to nail these coordinator hires. Got to. And I know in the past, Bobby Petrino has been a really good coordinator, but he didn't work out at A&M last year. How much of that is Jimbo Fisher? Right. I don't know. But I do believe that Bobby Petrino can still draw up really good game plans. I saw him do it with Missouri State a couple of years ago against Arkansas, yep. and they almost upset Arkansas. And I think that's probably half the reason Sam Pittman went out and hired him, because Missouri State had such a beautiful offensive game plan that night that you know, if you can replicate that on a weekly basis in the SEC, it's going to make the Hogs pretty dangerous.
Now, on that, John, on that Tyson chicken stock you're talking about, that's not the only, like, they have a lot of, you have Jerry Jones, he doesn't want to pay C.D. Lamb right now, but he definitely donates to Arkansas. There's a lot of old money in North Little Rock and the Little Rock area. Like, they are top half, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, they're top half of the SEC when it comes to donations, NIL money, and just money funneling through all their programs.
Yeah, I mean, I can't tell you for sure where they're
right,
at.
Obviously.
But what works to their advantage is that they are the biggest show in the state because, okay, yeah, you go down south to LSU, or you know, they're the only power conference team in the state. But, you know, then you have Tulane, and you have the Saints, you have the Pelicans. Like, there's other high-profile, visible sports in that state. And you just keep going around the map, and it's kind of the same thing. But in Arkansas, it's Arkansas and nothing else. So I think that works to their benefit because – in terms of if you want to be a donor or a supporter of an athletic program in that state, like it's the University of Arkansas. So that definitely works to their advantage because, you know, a state that probably doesn't show up as one of the most wealthy by most metrics has all of its wealth and booster support behind one school, and you know, obviously that benefits them. Does it make them eager to pay a buyout on Sam Pittman? I don't know. It depends on who they can go out and hire, but they're paying John Calipari a lot of money. Dave Van Horn makes a lot of money. The NIL resources going into basketball now are above and beyond what they were under Musselman. So, you know, I think you have to be realistic about kind of what to expect from that football program.
Yeah, talking with David Cobb, last thing for him, at David W. Cobb on X, CBS sports writer for college football, college basketball. I saw this sort of come across my timeline as well. Phil Longo, the OC at Wisconsin, with Luke Fickell, has officially named Miami transfer Tyler Van Dyke the starting quarterback there in Wisconsin. And it really brought to my attention, and I'm not even saying Wisconsin is the team that I'm speaking on, but like generally speaking, are there teams we're not discussing right now out there in the world of college football that you think we should be discussing more as teams that will break into the top 25 and really make a push in their respective conferences?
Yeah, without a doubt. There's teams we aren't discussing that are going to not only reach the top 25, but are going to make playoff pushes. And I don't necessarily think Wisconsin is one of those teams, but there are teams in the Big 12 and maybe even in the ACC who fit that bill that just fly under the radar. But there's enough parity in those conferences to where an Iowa State could come out of nowhere and not only compete for the Big 12, but compete for a playoff spot. You could say the same thing about a Nebraska, maybe. I would pick them over a Wisconsin in the Big Ten. More favorable schedule would allow them to do that. But that's what's going to make this year of college football so fun, is the belief and the dark horses that emerge. And you're not just a dark horse to maybe hopefully make the Capital One Bowl now. You're a dark horse to maybe make the college football playoff. And I know people say, well, yeah, but some of these teams that make it won't have a chance to actually win it.
Sure.
So what? I mean, most of the teams that make the NCAA tournament every year don't actually have a chance to win it. But it's exciting watching them trying to get in, and it's exciting seeing how much it means to them once they get there and seeing if they can't win a game or two, you know? And so that's what I'm excited about this college football season. I'm as interested in how all this plays out as I have been at any point in a really long time for this sport.
You brought up Nebraska. They're still tricky to me. I like Dylan Raiola. I like Matt Rhule. Is the PTSD too much to get over for that program? That's the problem we've run into.
I mean, when you see a preseason win total of 7.5, which is what it is at most books right now on Nebraska, which is absurd. I mean, this team hasn't been to a bowl since 2016, and now they're supposed to go out there and win 8 games playing in the Big Ten with a true freshman quarterback. I mean, I can't quite get there, but I know a lot of people are on that bandwagon. And look, there is a scenario where if it just totally pops, right, and Dylan Raiola is like what Caleb Williams was as a freshman at Oklahoma a few years ago, then sure, like they're a dark horse playoff team. I'm not there personally, but you know, I guess there's a better chance in my mind of that happening than of Wisconsin being that team.
Now, head-to-head, 8.5 wins for Tennessee and for Memphis. Who do you got? Come on.
Yeah, I'm actually, I would take Memphis. I would take Memphis, actually. On the win total. I'm not talking about, like, a head-to-head matchup on a neutral field.
Sure, it's competition. They're playing way worse competition, and I think their floor is higher.
But I love that. I love that that's a bet out there that you can make. Puts me in a tough spot. But, yeah, I'd actually take Memphis. That's more likely. More likely to hit nine, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Well, David, we'll do this again on Friday. Appreciate it.
All right, brother. Sounds good.
Yes, sir. That's David Cobb, college basketball, college football writer for CBS Sports on X at David W. Cobb. And he's brought to you by Oxbow, family-owned and operated retail store that has been in Memphis for over a decade at this point. They're conveniently located off of Poplar and off of Poplar on June Road behind the Amoco Station, 964 June Road to be exact. And what you see when you pull up, you'll have the parking lot. They have a fenced-in parking lot, and they have a two-story storefront with a kind and courteous staff that will show you in the direction whatever you need. Top floor, all the hunting and outdoor essentials. They have guns. They have all of the gear that you could possibly need on that top floor. On the bottom floor, gift-giving destination of the city of Memphis. And it could be for yourself, or it could be for someone else. They have best clothing and the best brands. Genteel, Free Fly, Fair Harbor, Duckhead, Mizzen and Main. They have polos, button-downs, pants, shorts, slacks, anything from as casual as you want to as nice and uppity as you want. They have everything you need there in Oxbow. And they have your favorite teams as well. Grizzlies, Tigers, all your SEC favorites, Arkansas, Alabama, Tennessee, Ole Miss. They have all that there at Oxbow. They also have vintage vinyl. They have sports memorabilia. They have the gear that you need to go attack the Grove and Tiger Lane as hard as you possibly can. Cups, coolers, koozies, tumblers, everything is there. Conveniently located at 964 June Road, Oxbow. And they have it online as well. All of that stuff online. You can ship it anywhere in the United States of America. Go to shopoxbow.com. Again, shopoxbow.com. And use my promo code as well. I'm going to give back to you. Use my promo code, TheGabeShow. All caps, no spaces, TheGabeShow. And you'll get 20% off your online order at shopoxbow.com. But whether you're going online or in-store at 964 June Road, remember to shop local. Shop Oxbow. Now, we have some NFL news that we have to break down. We have a Patriots player that may be traded, maybe not, but they have a contract situation on their hands, and we have more injuries to discuss on the other side right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. Edge rusher out on the market that teams are reaching out to the Patriots about. Now, his name is Matthew Judon. Now, I know a lot of people may not know that name if you're a casual NFL fan, but this is one of the most underrated pass rushers in the National Football League. Teams have been reaching out to the Patriots about him because the Pats extended a contract to him and he declined. Now, also, he said in a recent podcast he wrote out his own proposal to the Patriots and he's still awaiting a response. He did say, and you know, I side-eye the Jets when Matthew Judon says this. He said also that he would play on his contract if necessary, but he believed it didn't reflect his value. So I'm side-eyeing the Jets because if you wanted to go get a guy that would play on the bad contract that he has right now, you probably should have reached out to the Patriots about Matthew Judon instead of Hassan Reddick, who was angry about his contract with the Eagles. You end up trading for him. He's angry about it with you, and you're surprised. And also on the other end of that, isn't it kind of funny that the Jets' leading sack getter, Bryce Huff, here from Memphis, ends up with the Eagles? That's just hilarious. Only the Jets. Now, this is a guy who was owed $6.5 million in salary, in base salary this year. And in 2021, he had 12.5 sacks. 2022, 15.5 sacks. And then last year, before he got hurt, he had 4 sacks in 4 games. This is a guy that can absolutely help a team somewhere around the National Football League that needs some edge help. I know the Dolphins have been looking for guys like this for a long, long time. Maybe they will kick the tires on it. They just got Jalen Phillips back from his season-ending injury last year. He was having a career season before he got sidelined. But Matthew Judon is a guy that I think just about every team in the NFL, especially at a $6.5 million base salary, should be reaching out to the Pats about to see their interest and what they would take in return for a guy like that.
Without a doubt. I mean, if you can have one of the premier edge rushers in the NFL, it just gives you an advantage over everybody. And he is, like you said, he may not be the biggest name out there, but in terms of production, he's right there.
Yes, yes.
Right there.
All-pro caliber edge rusher. And the thing that really gets me is when you talk to Jerod Mayo, people have talked to Jerod Mayo about this, the whole defensive staff for the Patriots. Apparently he's been out there participating in practice, missed one day of practice for personal reasons, and he's been bringing along the young guys. Like, there's a difference in certain guys. I think most NFL franchises think that, you know, athletes are supposed to act like this, Matthew Judon-esque, where you're still out there participating, playing on a salary that you don't think reflects your value, but that's not how every situation is. And I think the Jets learned that, as I already mentioned.
What do you think his value is on the market? In terms of trade value, not necessarily money value.
Trade value, I think, again, when we talk about trades in the NFL, it's so strange, right? Because usually it's going to be a couple of picks. That's usually what they use to go get guys. And I think for the Patriots, they need to get as many draft picks as possible going into the future. So they need draft assets. They would just take some picks. Second round, third round the next year, something like that. But the Patriots have to decide, do they want him? And do they want to try to you know, give him a contract extension going into the future, or do they want to just give him up now, get what they can from a draft perspective, and then move into the future? I don't think he's going to shift their win total all that much.
Well, also, I think that they have to consider whether or not it makes sense to hold on to a 31-year-old and extend him when your team is going through a transitional period and you want youth in the building. And he is an avenue to which you can get more
whoever
get younger.
Whoever trades for him probably would work out an extension with him. But it'll be short-term, $20 million a year, so $18, $20 million a year.
But for the Patriots, it doesn't necessarily
make
sense.
Doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah.
I agree. But he has been very highly productive for them since they've given him that role. Now, also, moving on to the Lions, they have a bunch of injuries that we have to deal with. Jahmyr Gibbs left practice with a hamstring injury earlier this week. We did get a report today that the hamstring injury is not going to be crazy lingering. He should be available for week one for them. Terrion Arnold, their first-round pick at the cornerback position, he was evaluated for an upper body injury, and you're going to start to notice something here. He's not going to be out for all that long. They're going to probably sit him out for the rest of training camp, just like with Jahmyr Gibbs, and he'll be ready for week one. Final one, Ennis Rakestraw, the other cornerback they took out of Mizzou, he was evaluated for an ankle injury. And get this, Connor, you know what I'm about to say? He'll probably sit out the rest of training camp. He'll be ready for week one. So the Lions have had a bunch of sort of nicks and bruises along the way, but I still think they'll be phenomenal. And I seriously am getting to the point, and we'll see what happens with Brandon Ayuk. I'm getting to the point where when we look at rosters in the NFC and the teams that I really think can get over top and win the NFC this year, I think the Lions are right there on the same level as the 49ers. I know some people will say we have to see them get through the 49ers, but let's not forget they had a nice lead in the NFC Championship against the 49ers before they let that thing go. They have re-signed all of their franchise pillars. Amon-Ra St. Brown, Jared Goff, Penei Sewell. You have Taylor Decker at left tackle. They've improved that defense in the secondary with Ennis Rakestraw, Terrion Arnold. Jahmyr Gibbs is primed for an unbelievable year, and they still have David Montgomery in that backfield. That team, and Aiden Hutchinson's a year older and a year wiser. That team right there, they have the ability to win in the playoffs. They've shown us that. I know we have to see them get over top, but when you compare rosters, they're way closer than the 49ers than we actually think, than most people think.
So do you think it's like the 49ers at the top, then Philly, and probably Detroit right there?
I think 49ers, Lions, then
Philly.
Philly, let's not forget about last year, man. And you lost one of your biggest franchise pillars in Jason Kelce.
Yeah, you did.
So there's the supposed rift between Nick Sirianni and Jalen Hurts. But don't forget, they got killed in the wild card game.
That is true.
By the Bucs last year.
Is it weird that, because we did this about the AFC in the first hour, and now we're talking about the NFC, and it appears as if there is only like six real teams that you think could make a run at it. Is that a low number for most NFL seasons, or is that about on par? It just feels like to me that a lot of teams this year are kind of in that middle tier, and they're not in, I don't know, it feels like a low number to me. Like, we're always kind of talking about, like, it feels like you get three teams from each.
And this will fit in. Something I was planning on doing on Friday was really breaking down the NFL in general, and picking the teams that can actually win a Super Bowl. You have some teams that'll make the playoffs.
Right,
but they'll get beat, bowed out, whether it's first or second round. Maybe they get it to a championship game. But I want to break down the amount of teams in the NFL that I truly believe can win a Super Bowl. I would imagine that number probably somewhere around six.
I'm thinking about six.
About six. And I think most of them, weirdly enough, probably from the NFC, because I think the AFC, with the top-heavy nature of the Chiefs, it's just so hard to imagine another team dethroning them, right? Like, that's the biggest issue. When you're talking about anybody coming out of the AFC, you have to discuss that big team in red that has a guy with number 15 that has the coach with the mustache.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Ash, you always have to pay attention to them when you're talking about the AFC. I think most of the teams that I'll put in that sort of ranking or conversation will actually be out of the NFC. It's going to be strange to sort of break that down, but we'll do that Friday.
The AFC is probably at this point, like, can we get a dynasty, please, in the NFC? Like, yeah. Can we move it across town, please? Yeah. Like, we went from the Patriots right into the Chiefs.
Yep. I'm with you. Now, speaking of the NFC North, just got done talking about the Lions' injuries. Dan Orlovsky, who I do respect, he's really good with quarterback play, and he's a really good NFL analyst for the most part. Can get a little hot takey at times, but he usually stays away from that most of the time compared to some of the colleagues he has. But he ranked the NFC North wide receiver corps. He ranked them 1 through 4. And if there's any team that you would have asked me, who can't be ranked first?
The Packers.
It's the Packers.
Don't tell me he put them first.
He ranked the Packers first.
What? How?
This was the order.
That's crazy.
In which he put the NFC North receiving corps. Packers, Vikings 2, Bears 3, Lions with newly signed Amon-Ra St. Brown, Sam Laporta at 4. And when I read this, I'm like, is this a mistake? Is NBA Centel getting me? Is some like fake account getting me? No, this is how he ranked it. So what he did basically is ranked Romeo Dobbs, Jaden Reed over the likes of Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, Keenan Allen, Roma Dunsey, DJ Moore, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Sam Laporta. He ranked that receiving core over everybody else in the NFC North. If I'm going to give my real ranking here, without question, it's Bears first. I understand they're unproven. I understand that Caleb Williams has not gotten to throw to them and they're going to have some things they have to work out in training camp. But when you put together Keenan Allen, who has been a consistent 100-yard reception guy, 1,000-yard receiving guy, through 9 years in his career with the Chargers. You put together DJ Moore, who caught for 1,400 last year. You put together Roma Dunsey, who is a all-do-it-all type of wide receiver. And then you put together Cole Kmet and Gerald Everett as pass-catching tight ends. There is no way anybody can catch up to the receiving corps that the Bears have right now. Now, I know it's in theory, and it's got to show on the field. But when you look at the talent they possess, it supersedes anybody we see in the NFC North. And second, I'd probably throw the Vikings. Vikings would probably be in second. You have Jordan Addison. You have the best receiver in the game and Justin Jefferson. I know he was hurt last year, but hey, it is what it is.
Breaking news, Gabe Coon.
Okay.
Breaking news from Jordan Schultz. The Patriot, by the way, it was retweeted by Adam Schefter, so you know it's got some validity to it. The Patriots are close to finalizing a trade that will send 4-time Pro Bowl pass rusher Matthew Judon to the Falcons.
Makes sense. That's a good one. That's a good spot. They need some edge rushers. They need to make something happen there. That's actually a really good deal.
Well, and the Falcons were one of those teams that I think we're right outside of that six teams that could win the Super Bowl. But this is the type of move.
This is the type of move that could definitely move you up those rankings.
Might bump you up a little bit.
Now, I do want to finish this real quick on Dan Orlovsky before we hop into that. Dan Orlovsky, we already mentioned, put the Packers first. But then third, I would probably put the Lions with Amon-Ra St. Brown and one of the best young tight ends in the league in Sam LaPorta.
Yeah.
And then fourth by far to me is the Packers. I don't even think it's close. Yeah, you have like a bunch of young guys that you expect to catch passes, but none of them are none of them are elite. None of them are 1,000-yard wide receivers. Romeo Doubs and Jaden Reed, that's what you're hanging your hat on? That's absolutely nuts. It's absolutely nuts. Now, the Falcons did just trade. It looks like they're finalizing a trade to go get Matthew Judon, who we talked about off the top of this segment. Pros pro, 15.5 sacks 2 years ago, 12.5 sacks. 15.5 sacks, 2 years ago, and then 12.5 sacks 3 years ago. He had 4 sacks in 4 games last year. This is really going to help them get over top. I really believe that. You have a consistent pass rush. You still have Grady Jarrett there in the middle. Your back end has been, you know, your defensive backfield has been improved over the past couple of years. You have Jesse Bates back there still at safety. I like this for the Falcons. This makes a whole lot of sense. Again, I'm not saying this is going to put them over top, and on Friday they may not be in my teams that can win a Super Bowl. But if Kirk Cousins goes right, I think that defense is improved enough to really win, you know, 11, 12 games if all goes right. And the injury and the health, you know, conversation stays relatively stable.
So I think it's a good move for both sides. It seems like it's going to cost the third rounder. Not bad.
Just a third rounder.
I don't know if it's just a third rounder. It's just being reported that a third rounder is going back.
That's,
but, you know.
That is, even though he's 31, that's a worthwhile move for the Falcons.
Yeah.
You take a chance, even though we know we talk about it all the time. Once you get to 30 in pro sports, it's like you're dead.
You're dead.
You're dying.
You're dead.
You're dying. But
you
Matthew
and your
Judon,
friends are dead.
Matthew Judon still has some juice. That's a really good pickup for the Falcons, who are trying to go all in. Still can't really explain the Michael Penix pick that they made in the NFL draft, especially when it feels like they're just trying to throw everything at this year and the next couple of years with Kirk Cousins. But Matthew Judon off to the Falcons, traded from the Patriots. Really like that move. Now let's go ahead and grab a break. And when we come back, I think there's a story that we need to discuss. And it's another example of don't cast stones in glass houses. We did get some breaking news in the last segment as we were ending it. Matthew Judon is heading from the Patriots to the Falcons, and it looks like the return is just a third-round pick. Really good move for the Falcons. I think this rounds out their defense relatively well. They need some help at their linebacking core, but when you look at their back end, you have Jesse Bates, one of the best free safeties in the league, A.J. Terrell, one of the best young corners in the league, who is on the NFL Top 100. But then when you look at that D-line, Grady Jarrett, playmaking D-tackle, you have David Onyemata, who you signed away from the New Orleans Saints, who can be a nice run stuffer. And now you have your outside linebacker, edge rusher, and Matthew Judon for not that much in return, just a third-round pick. This team really, on top of what they have on offense, they have definitely supplemented this offseason by going and working on that defense. This is going to be a really good move for them. I like this a whole lot for them. This really puts them up a rung.
It's a great move. Great move.
Yep. Now, on that note, let's go ahead and get into small talk.
Here on 92.9, we talk ball every weekday from 4 till 7 p.m. Except right now, it's time for Big Man Small Talk on 92.9's Gabe Kuhn Show.
And Small Talk is brought to you by Conway Services, reputable service available 7 days a week. Now, Connor, do you remember Two-A-Days on MTV?
Of course I remember Two-A-Days.
Hoover High.
Oh,
Hoover High. You remember the head coach, Rush Probst? Yeah, what a guy. But, you know, that was John Parker Wilson, all the guys. Uh-huh. I missed, you know, content like that. That was fun.
I was back in the day. Like, MTV growing up was amazing.
It was great. It was
so
great.
Good.
They have lost their way, though. Absolutely lost their way. Now, if you have been paying attention to Hoover High as of late, you have a lot of parents and a lot of different people that support that Hoover High football program that are very, very mad. Because what has happened this offseason is a lot of video has been, you know, put out in the world of coaches tearing kids' helmets off, punching them, hitting them. And I think what we term it as is just straight-up abuse. The head coach of Hoover High is suspended without pay, and also the defensive coordinator for what they have been seen doing on camera to some of their players, which is straight-up abuse. Now, with that, there's a former coach, Rush Probst, that is coaching elsewhere. He's still kicking around. But he was reached out to by Alabama.com, Al.com, high school sports. And he was asked about his former team in Hoover High. and what he thinks about the practice videos from the head coach and the DC tearing kids' helmets off and knocking them around. And what he said was you just have to coach with integrity. Now, let me take you down the path of Rutsch Probst. There's a reason Rutsch Probst no longer coaches at Hoover. You want to know why, Connor? He was accused of the same things, not caught on video, but also he had two separate families that he was working with, that he was going back and forth between. A guy talking about integrity who had to step down and got fired at Hoover High for abuse of his players and having two families is telling these coaches, which, sure, it's a fine message, about integrity. Next, you're going to tell me that Antonio Brown is going to speak up on money management. Next, you're going to tell me that our man Bill Clinton's going to tell us to not have marital affairs. I mean, this is, of all the messengers to talk about integrity and coaching, this is the last person who needs to be giving that message. This is absolutely insane. Whatever he's having, I'll have. I mean, this guy has a ridiculous amount of confidence, and he does not give a damn. Rutsch Probst.
Incredible work by whoever asked him the question. Just an amazing guy. You know that the moment they had the idea to ask him about this, they were like, oh, this is going to be gold. Because it's either going to be completely insane, or it's going to be something like this. Just 10 out of 10.
Well, I think this is completely insane and something like this.
Column A, column B?
Yes. I think that's what this is. Now, hour number three is on the way here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, and we're going to start it off talking some Memphis football, see how camp's coming along. We have Memphis OC and quarterback coach Tim Kramsey up next, so make sure that you stick around. Should be a fun conversation.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.